Hello and welcome. We are back. It is the Baller Lifestyle Podcast from theballerlifestyle.com. I am once again your host, Brian Beckner. Stoked you are here. Stoked you are joining us for a very special 100th episode of the program. That's right. We've done 100. That means by my calculations, carry the one, that each one of you owes me at least $10,000 at this point.
You're like the guy on Wikipedia that asks for money every time you go there.
That's right. All of you, I've never asked any of you for money, and all of you owe me at this point because I have entertained you so much. And we will keep doing that today with a very special episode of the show. As you may have just heard, we have a guest today, a special guest of the program. Let me go through everyone that will be appearing with us today. Of course, we have, first and foremost, co-host of the program, appearing live via Skype from New Jersey, Ed Daly. Ed, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Very fired up.
Excellent. Also, joining the program, second week in a row, full episode of Fancy Sauce, the one and only, the Baller Lifestyle Pop Culture Correspondent. Of course, I'm talking about Kate McManus, a.k.a. Fancy Sauce. How are you doing, Fancy?
Pretty excited.
The only person who's never listened to the show.
That's right. We had her on, and I'll get to my next guest in a minute. We had her on last week, and she said she was really excited to be on the entire show for the first time. Meanwhile, she's been on several episodes of the entire show. Were she a listener, she would know that.
Good to know.
Also joining us today, very special guest of the show. He's a iconic radio talk show host. Mm-hmm. If you listen to the fourth most popular sports radio station in Houston, you probably know who he is. Also, if you listen in places like Detroit and Indianapolis at 3 a.m., you'll hear him there. If you listen early in the morning in Los Angeles, you will hear him on ESPN LA, where he handles morning duties with a partner. He is the one and only. He's the guy that when you meet him, he loves it when you come up to him and say, "Hey, man, what was it like working for Rome?" Of course, I'm talking about close friend of mine, icon, mentor, Travis Rogers. Travis, how are you doing?
I should not be nearly as excited to talk about a 20-year-old evening soap opera as I am, but I'm very, very, very excited to do exactly that.
That's right. So we had long kicked around.
We're gonna give a manly take on this thing.
If you can, I'm gonna try. Yeah.
As if there's such a thing. We had long kicked around the idea of doing something special for the 100th episode. And at some point, I realized that I had a resource at my fingertips that I never really knew I had. I didn't realize that my radio partner and my podcast partner were the world's two foremost experts on the topic of Beverly Hills 90210. And so we decided to do a 90210 episode for the 100th episode of the show. We are talking all things Beverly Hills 90210. Now, I'm just going to be the ringmaster here because I got to tell you something.
Yeah.
Growing up, when Beverly Hills 90210 was on, I think it was on Wednesday nights.
Thursday
nights.
Yeah.
And I specifically remember drinking lots of tall boys of Magnum malt liquor in my buddy's car outside by his in his condominium complex pool.
That sounds like
so
a blast.
I never watched the show. I was way too cool to watch the show. I was up to other stuff. I'm familiar with the show. I know the characters. I don't know the storylines. I know, you know, the big topics.
That's why Ed and I are here, because only do I know the general themes of the show, but I know the minutiae of the show. I know that all of the stupidest things. I know that Carol Potter's former high school boyfriend became a National Geographic photographer and then came back and tried to seduce her, but she said no because Jim's a good man. I know these things.
I know the name of the fireman that rescued Donna from the fires in the hills. His name was Cliff Yeager, by the way.
By the way, when she was holding that deer when she was about to get burned to death, I've never wanted to beat a person so badly in my life. It was like a scene out of Bambi that made you want to vomit.
I enjoyed when Cliff Yeager tried to break the sound barrier in the right stuff. Okay, like I said, as has become very apparent, we have the two world's foremost experts on the show. Let's just kind of explain to the audience who may be cool like me that We'll hit the bigger points of the show. Right.
Cool like the guy with two broken wrists because he had a girl's bottom.
That's exactly right. So Beverly Hills 90210 debuted. I didn't realize this. Ran 10 years. It debuted October 4th, 1990. Ran until May 17th, 2000. That is quite a run. It's actually the longest running show that Aaron Spelling ever produced, if you can think of that.
I believe, too, they did it. They were kind of pioneers in this, that they ran it in the traditional time from from fall until spring, and then they would take the summer off. But they were the first ones to put new episodes on during the summer to grow their audience. Well, and it was pretty good idea by old Aaron Spelling.
That was the first. That's what actually made it like a bigger deal.
Oh my God, I can't believe you guys know that. Yeah, the first season wasn't highly rated, and so what they did is they ran episodes in the summer. New episodes when everything else was in reruns, and that's how it grabbed its audience of mostly young people. The show centers around, who does the show center around? It's the story of
the twins.
The Walsh family.
I didn't know they were twins. Yes. I thought they were just brother and sister.
No, Brandon and Brenda.
Fraternal. Oh, I guess you have to be fraternal if you're different sex.
That's right? How it works. Yeah.
So I'll just read from the Wikipedia. The initial premise of the show was based on the adjustment and culture shock that twins, Brandon and Brenda, experienced when they and their parents, Jim and Cindy...
What kind of shitheads name their twins Brandon and Brenda?
Yeah, that is fucked up.
Two shitheads from the Midwest is the answer to that question. Yeah,
that's right. Vikings fans.
They're from Minneapolis. They moved to Beverly Hills. He's moving up in the world. He's an accountant. In addition to chronicling the friendships and romantic relationships of the characters, the show also addressed numerous topical issues such as date rape, gay rights, animal rights, alcoholism, drug abuse, domestic violence, sex, anti-Semitism, teenage suicide, teenage pregnancy, and just as AIDS. It doesn't specify if it's the AIDS.
Full-blown?
Or full-blown AIDS. Yeah. We're not sure. Although I know
quick
you guys
question
know.
With the anti-Semitism. Was Andrea Jewish?
Yeah. As was Zuckerman? David Silver.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they might have experienced some.
Wow. Yeah. Mel Silver took a beating from Donna's mom about some Hanukkah Christmas stuff.
Well, Mel Silver, first of all, was not
They got married, right?
He was an endodontist, and he really did not seem to pay a ton of attention
to
David.
He does root canals.
Yeah, that was his deal. And then Therese Martin was just perhaps the most evil person ever to appear on that show. It was Felice, yeah.
With an F.
And just to finish the series overview, the series began with the introduction of the Walsh family.
Donna's father was a cardiologist.
Jim, Cindy, Brandon, and Brenda, who had recently moved from Minnesota. In the first episode, Brandon and Brenda began attending West Beverly Hills High School, where they were eventually introduced to several friends who composed the remainder of the cast. Kelly Taylor, who I would argue among the original cast was the only one who was bangable. Steve Sanders, Andrea Zuckerman, unless you're counting Dylan McKay, David Silver, Scott Scanlon.
Dylan wasn't in the opener though. Just
R.I.P. Oh, wasn't he?
No,
he was like Fonzie. They just thought they'd add a side character for an episode, and then he caught on.
Oh, really? Is that when he took Brandon to the green room?
Every show needs a bad boy, though.
Episode one or two? Absolutely. The show followed the dramatic lives of its characters through high school, college, and ultimately the adult world.
Not that adult
the
world.
Adult film world?
Not that world, no.
While introducing several additional characters as its seasons progress, it is the longest running show produced by Aaron Spelling, airing slightly longer than Dynasty. Okay, I would like to go around the room and
just quickly, I bet there is some 90210 themed porn out there.
I'm sure there is. There's a rule of the internet. It's like rule 421. If it exists, there is a porn parody.
That's true.
Out.
Okay.
Beginning, Ed Daly. Give me your, take me back, 1990, you would have been in high school, you would have been a freshman in high school, I believe.
Correct.
You would have been playing freshman football in New Jersey. Tell me, did you watch the first episode? Give me young Ed Daly's experience with the television program, Beverly Hills 90210.
I remember watching the pilot because it was promising to be... young, beautiful people, and I didn't have cable at the time, so
what?
I I just needed something to masturbate to at the beginning. Right. Mm-hmm.
So you were looking for hotties, and you unfortunately were confronted with Donna. Then you continued to watch.
In the pilot episode, Marianne Moore threw the big party, and she was one of the hot girls from Head of the Class. And
I loved Head of the Class.
She was never seen again. She was Maria on Head of the Class, but she was in a bikini in the opener.
Wow, interesting. Okay, Travis Rogers, and something struck me when Beverly Hills 902 debuted in 1990. You, I happen to know, graduated high school in 1989.
Correct.
So you were an adult when Beverly Hills 902. You were attending college.
Yes.
You were a big time college baseball pitcher. Yes. You were a recruited guy. You were on scholarship.
Like, yes.
Shit was happening for you.
Well.
And every Thursday night, you were sitting in your dorm room. Did you discover 90210 in your dorm room?
Here's the thing. I didn't discover 90210 until the second year.
Right. So you missed the first season.
I missed the first season and had to go back and retroactively get up to speed. I discovered it in my second year of college, and it was part of the routine getting ready to go out on a Thursday night, because as everybody knows in college, Thursday night's the first night you go out.
Right.
So remember, college, the timetable is way different. You go out late. You're pre-drinking at 90210 times.
Ed knows. So that's exactly what we would do. We would have a few and watch that and then go out to start the evening.
So you're saying you would watch 90210 with other dudes?
I would watch it with my roommate, Antonio Vernon.
Yes.
We would watch that.
And he was a few years older than you.
Yeah. We liked it.
Wow.
A viewing of 90210 really got you prepped for your for your big rager overnight.
Oh, yeah.
You'd have a few keystones while you watch
90210. Keystone Ice
hadn't been invented at the time.
Right.
Excellent.
So at the end of every episode, you guys would high five and be like, "That was a great one. Let's go out and get crazy."
Yeah,
I did that for 4 years in college too.
Yes.
I was afraid that this was going to turn into something that it's not. It wasn't that, but I'm also not going to pretend that we didn't make a point to watch it before we would go out. That's what you would watch before you'd go out on Thursday, and before you get on Saturday, you'd watch Cops.
Oh, right.
This was the routine of
the
Fox shows that you would consume before you went out.
So it was sort of a cultural touchstone in that not just you and Antonio Vernon were watching it, but your other buddies were probably watching it.
Everyone was watching. Better social life than we did.
Everyone's watching.
I didn't know anyone that watched it. Okay. Kate McManus.
Yes.
Everyone knows you grew up on the bottom, the southern hemisphere.
The land down under.
You are from Western Australia, Perth. What is your experience with 90210? Would have been in high school as well.
Yeah, I was. I was fascinated with it because we were fascinated. It was before the internet. We were fascinated with all things American. I'm from one of the most isolated cities in the world.
So you wanted to go, you thought, oh, this is what it's like.
This is
real.
Exactly. You're like, first of all, I didn't go to a co-ed high school, so that was fascinating. I had to wear a uniform, being able to dress how you wanted, wear makeup.
And you were West Coast.
What's the uniform
West
look like?
Coast Australia.
Let's take a walk down that road for a second.
Hold on. Ed, what'd you say there?
You were West Coast Australia, too, so like isolated from Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah, isolated from other cities in Australia as well as the rest of the world. So I was, fascinated, and 90210 was a big deal. Everyone watched it that I knew. I think it was on Friday nights.
Now, you had a pleated skirt, and then did you wear the socks?
We had a summer uniform and a winter uniform. In summer, you had knee-high socks.
Slowly,
knee-high socks.
Knee-high socks. Yeah.
With laced-up shoes.
Yes.
And then like a dress that had a zipper up the front. Oh, it was like a short sleeve pinafore dress that you wore a little bit above your knees.
Yes.
Huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And in the winter, it was like a pleated skirt, tights,
and all, like,
Oxford shirt, tie, and a blazer.
And the girls would run around playing field hockey and stuff, and they'd probably go to the locker room and get changed and have a shower.
It wasn't a lesbian school.
Oh, but there were showers.
We didn't play field hockey.
Was there showers?
I'm just kidding. Yeah, we had we showered together.
You guys all showered together, like after your sport,
after swimming.
With your accents, would you guys all have your accents on?
Yeah, we'd all wear our accents and shower together.
You'd have your accents and your other things on display.
Yeah, we'd be wet, talking in accents.
Oh, fantastic! Yeah. Now, also growing up, we'll go around. We'll start with Kate. Kate, you were at that age. You were becoming a woman. You were coming into your own. Mm-hmm. You were starting to notice boys, and you were starting to, your hormones were raging. When you watched 90210, was it Dylan McKay that really got things going for you? Or maybe was it Scott Scanlon?
Which one was Scott Scanlon?
He's the Laker fan that yeah. got a little trigger happy.
Was supposed to be a series regular, and then they just decided.
I have to Google what he looks like.
Dylan replaced him on the regular payroll.
Right.
I thought David Silver was cute.
You did. Unbelievable.
And then later, such a tool. Then later, I was really into Noah.
See, I was kind of out on 90210. Yeah. By the time that Noah came around, I'd checked out.
He was a working adult.
He was right. Noah sucked.
I was not into Jason Priestley.
Right. Noah was the brooding placeholder on the record.
I have to Google this Scott.
Noah was like Dylan Light. It should be stated.
Yeah, like Dylan came on the show, and they had him and Dylan together towards the end. It was pretty sure you were just a placeholder. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Right. And now, Kate, were you into Noah because one of your friends may or may not have intercoursed him in real life?
Well, that was much later.
Oh.
After his TV career dried up.
He was no longer on 90210.
No, I just thought he was cute. I thought he was cuter than Luke Perry, but I did think Luke Perry was hot.
Was he still playing the I was Noah on 90210 card?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, come on, he wouldn't do that. Think of all the things he's done since then.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, to be fair, yeah.
He's big. Okay. And I assume, again, I wasn't a watcher of the show, but I was not into any of these chicks. And some people would argue that Brenda was attractive. I didn't find her attractive at all. It was strictly for all guys, and I'm speaking to Ed and Travis. It was Kelly Taylor that was the sexable one on the show, right?
Yes. Brenda had summer teeth. So right.
Bad teeth. Her eyes were crooked. She's got some
like
big things.
She looked like a Picasso painting.
Yeah.
She was in a one piece.
Yes.
Except for in the opening credits where they did have her in a bikini top, and all the girls wore a bikini top, except for Andrea Zuckerman, who wore a blouse.
Right.
Not a shirt, not a blouse.
Of a woman of a certain age would not be
wearing. She was wearing a pirate shirt.
Right.
As a girl, I found the casting of Steve Ian Ziering very confusing.
Oh, it's fascinating.
What was that?
It's fascinating. We're going to get to that.
So let's put when it comes to the women on the show, Kelly Taylor of the regular cast, the recurring every episode,
the early cast,
yes,
was the only one that you thought was genuinely. Brenda was different looking, but not classically beautiful. Right. Tori Spelling is legitimately ugly.
She's
like
ugly.
It's not it's not one of those things you say, oh, she's not my cup of tea. Like,
no. Here's the thing.
She's not cute.
Any reasonable standard. She's an ugly woman.
I agree.
And
same with Brenda.
Before,
as a girl, though, sorry, Ed, just
okay.
Brenda had a cool attitude.
Oh, really?
Chicks thought she had a cool, sassy attitude.
It did not make me want to have sex with her.
Ed, what were you going to say?
Before the internet, you would see the opening credits, and you'd be like, whoa, what's she doing there? And her name was Tori Spelling, and the show was created by Aaron Spelling. Like, before the internet, you knew. Like, oh, I get it. I get why she's here.
Right.
And then you had Andrea, who that's just, I mean, we don't even need to talk about that, right? Yeah. We can move on.
I would rank Andrea.
She was like somebody's uncle.
Brenda.
The best looking girl on that show, week in and week out, is whichever girl Brandon had as his girlfriend.
Right.
He always had the best looking woman on the show was his girlfriend, whoever that might have been at any given time.
Right? Yeah, that's true.
Like Nikki, Audrey from the first Vacation.
Yeah.
So while we're at it, let's talk about their ages, first of all. Ian Ziering, Kate brought this up. Steve Sanders.
System?
Clearly not of high school age. He's definitely gotten some plug work later in life. Because here's a guy.
He had a receding hairline in high school.
He's in high school. He's wearing tank tops to high school and driving a Corvette.
With a braided belt and tucked in. Yes. His tank top was tucked into denim jeans.
He's also got a permed mullet.
Mm-hmm.
And a receding hairline. He basically looks like somebody's
personalized
stepdad.
Personalized plates.
I ate a Ferrari.
He's somebody's stepdad, but he's going to high school. I would ask, and this is something we play on this show, how fucking old is this guy? We'll go around the room. Ed Daly, assuming you haven't researched, tell me right now, Steve Sanders, Ian Ziering, very fit guy, by the way. This guy trains.
Yeah, he was always the only one who actually resembled a man.
Yeah.
Like all the other guys looked like spindly third grade girls.
That's because
I legitimately thought he was a mature age student was returning.
So today, right now in 2015, how fucking old is all this guy, Ian Ziering?
I think they were about 2 years older than me in the showtime.
That's right.
He looked a little old. I'm gonna say he was 40. Yeah, I'm going to say right now he's 47.
47 years old. Travis Rogers. How fucking old is this guy, Ian Ziering?
I want to say he was older than I was, so yeah. I'm going to go... 47 is a good... I'll go a 48.
48 years old.
You Price is Right me.
20. Yeah.
He went the other way, wouldn't I?
He went $1 over.
Because I could go over.
Yeah. Okay. Kate McManus. Ian Ziering.
I was going to go under 46.
46 years old. Ian Ziering. Born March 30th. 1964 is 51 years old today. He's got a five handle on his age, which would make him in 1990, that was 25 years ago. That makes him 26 years old, playing a high school sophomore. Very interesting. Should we play the same game?
Playing it poorly,
Luke Perry, let's play it again with
Very
Luke Perry.
Very confusing.
How fucking old is this guy? We'll start with you, Kate McManus. Kate, how fucking old is this guy, Luke Perry, today?
All right. I'm going to say he is 47.
47 years old, Travis Rogers.
50.
50 years old, Luke Perry. And Ed Daly, your thoughts, Luke Perry's age. How fucking old is this guy?
I'm going to say he's 45.
Born October 11th. 1966. Luke Perry has just had his 49th birthday, so he would have been 24 years old playing a high school sophomore. What was up with that? That was a thing in the 80s and 90s where they would make high school age people like the Breakfast Club. Like they would cast very old actors to play people in high school.
Judd Nelson,
across the board.
Judd Nelson must have been in his late 50s when he was on the Breakfast Club.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, other than the two girls, Kelly Taylor and Brenda Walsh, it wasn't even casted correctly in the sense that you could suspend your disbelief as you watched it. They were all glaringly too old.
Yes.
Like those two, you'd be like, oh, okay, maybe. But
yes.
Luke Perry and Ian Ziering are
much
like,
too old.
No, those guys.
Luke Perry had deep crow's feet.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was shocking. Okay, let's go. I solicited many, many questions from the listeners. Let's get to one right now. This is from our good friend Rome Show. He writes, When Beverly Hills 90210 was on, I could never identify with any of the dorks on the show. Which character did you identify with most? Oh, that's actually from Pareda. Pareda 44 asked that. Travis Rogers, who did you identify with?
None of them line for line, but more than the other.
Yeah.
Not Dylan, because I was a rule follower.
Right.
Not Steve, because I'm not stupid. And right. So that kind of leaves David Silver. I don't really like to dance and rap, so that's not really going to work.
Right. You don't wear overalls with one thing undone. No, yeah,
I don't do that. Right. So
DJ T-Rod
only on the weekends. Yes.
Right,
I was ones and twos. I was a little worried about getting in trouble, like Brando.
Of course, yes,
but see, I did not share Brandon's moral compass. Like, I was okay with people being taken advantage of. Yes. That didn't bother me. As long as it wasn't me, I didn't really care.
That's right.
But yeah, I guess Brandon, because I was afraid of getting in trouble more than anything. Like, Brando had his head screwed on correctly.
Interesting. I would pick you to be a Jim Walsh guy because you I can never picture you being. I picture you always being a dad age.
Wow. So
even when you were like 17.
And Brandon was like an annoying dad kid.
That's
he was
that's
the
true.
Kid that was acting like a dad.
That's true.
I wasn't the guy that was acting like a dad when I was a teenager, but I was the one who was worried about getting in trouble with my dad. So that was the Brandon angle. The other ones I didn't get at all. Like, David Silver wanted people to see that. Like, I get being secretly a dancer.
Right.
Like, that's something
he was openly a dancer. Like, he was openly dancing.
Guys, I'm going to be doing
he embraced
showcase.
It.
Yeah.
Come and watch me in my
was
showcase.
Was he a break dancer? What kind
it
of dancing
all,
was it?
Yeah, it was like popping and locking.
Ed Daly, same pretty question sick. To you. Who did young Ed Daly, growing up in New Jersey, fantasizing about life in Beverly Hills, California, who did you identify with? Were you a Sanders guy?
Well, I view this question as I need to go a little off the main crew. I identified with Deshaun Hardell because he was the only person in the history of the show that actually played sports. When I was in high school, I played sports. Like I was not like a meathead jock, but like these guys, I don't know what they did with the free time. Nobody, even Steve Sanders, who was in good shape, he never played sports. I'd never hung out with people that weren't part of sports.
They worked at the Blaze, Ed.
He played golf with his dad, Rush Sanders.
Right. And that's Brandon made golf, the basketball team. Not
oh, he did.
Yeah, and it was his first year, and then he found out that the black kids that came in really didn't go to West Beverly, so he had to write an article for the Blaze, and then he was on the outside out, yeah.
Well, that always struck me. The one thing about Beverly Hills 90210, like, these kids weren't doing anything that I was doing in high school.
Yeah, like, Sanders could have been on the football team.
Right. Yeah. Oh, sure.
Right. And Sanders, like, he would have been interested in maybe, like, smoking a joint with me. Like, I feel like there were kids at that high school that were cool, and they just put the camera on the wrong kids.
Right.
Like, I didn't identify with any of those shitheads. No. They weren't doing anything.
Nobody could.
No, they didn't listen to Primus. Like, they didn't get it. Okay, let's hit another one. We have some voicemail calls to play. This one is from our dear friend, Mark the Nomad. Let's hear Mark the Nomad's question for the crew.
Hey, guys. This is your loyal listener, Mark the Nomad, and I had a question for the 100th episode of The Baller Lifestyle about 90210 and the superfans. My question is simply, based on your guys' fandom of the show, how were you able to lose your virginity? Thank you.
Excellent, excellent question. Yep. Travis, you lost your virginity in a pool house, it's my understanding.
It's not exactly true.
Ed Daly.
I can go with that story. That could be the one.
Ed Daly, I think it's sort of a bigger, more global question where I think Mark the Nomad has taken the piss out of you guys a little bit when he asks in general were you able to lose your virginity, not how specifically, right, Ed?
Yeah, you know the old glass houses statement.
Yes, yeah, I'm familiar with it.
Well, how about if a guy who lives in Florida has a Jim Harbaugh tattoo and tweets about the Detroit Lions? How about if he's going to try to take a shot at you? Like, are you really going to be insulted?
Wow,
probably not.
Wow,
because he's a huge fucking loser.
Wow, taking shots at Mark the Nomad. Unbelievable. I appreciate you reaching out, Mark the Nomad. Let's go. Let's do another email question.
Can I answer the question?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. It wasn't in a pool house.
No. Well, no. See, what happens is that when a man and a woman love each other, they engage in a special embrace, and blood will flow to certain places, and then you just kind of take it from there.
Right.
That's how it happens.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
physically.
Yeah. Like physiologically.
Gotcha.
The act of sexual intercourse. Yes. That's how it takes place.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And if you want to know about my actual virginity loss, it was brief, and it was during the intro to Bohemian Rhapsody in the early 90s. Wait, sometime.
You were watching Wayne's World.
No, but like that was. Remember how it got popular when Wayne's World came out?
Yeah.
Like that song was on. I remember I didn't even make it out of the intro.
Wow. Well, it's a long song. It is a long song.
But they didn't even get to like the main part of the song, and I was already done.
Kate McManus, we will spare you the trauma of having to describe the loss of your virginity. Specifically,
I'm not talking about
specifically,
that.
Specifically, we'll spare
on this
me.
Podcast.
I was going to say, I think we're sparing the wrong person.
We'll
here.
Spare me the trauma.
You guys didn't ask me who I identified with on the show.
Oh, who did you most identify with? Brenda.
Of the main,
don't say Andrea.
Of the main cast, probably a combination of Kelly and Brenda.
Kelly and Brenda, because Kelly was hot.
But
and
ultimately,
you didn't want to identify with a chick that
ultimately
wasn't hot.
Claire. Was who
Claire.
Who was really who I identified
Claire's,
with.
Claire's my freebie. We haven't gotten to Claire yet.
And I thought I looked like her when I had like short hair.
Claire's by far the hottest chick that
And
was
I used
on
to
that
wear
show.
My makeup just like her.
You know that I have many, many thoughts on Claire Arnold.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Chancellor we Arnold's all daughter. Oh,
she's Claire, fantastic. Played by Kathleen Robertson, incidentally, is married to the manager of Friend of the Show, Gary Dauberman.
That's right. That's right.
So okay, shout out to Kathleen Robertson.
I might be able to encounter her and cash in one of my freebies. Is that what you're saying?
We're definitely going to let her know that we've done this show.
Absolutely.
And that she should have a listen.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, here's another question. This is from our friend Rome Show. Like you, I have, of course, seen Beverly Hills 90210, but have limited knowledge of that show. That said, I do have a question that would best be answered by you. In your opinion, how do you think Travis Rogers and Ed Daly would be received by the gang if they were classmates? I have
such a good question.
I have my own thoughts of how a 40-something teenager and pasty East Coast guy might fit in, but I'll leave that to you to pass judgment. All the best, Rome Show. Well, I can answer that. Travis, I think, would have fit. These guys were nerds. These guys were not cool. Like, Travis would have fit
Wait a second.
He would have buddied right up with Brando. Hey, Brando, you want to shoot some baskets in the driveway? Like, they would have been buddies.
Shooting baskets in the driveway is fun.
Yes, he would have.
Of course it is.
Travis would have been a very cordial guest at one of the Walsh Thanksgivings.
Cindy and Jim would have said, you know what? Yes. He's a nice boy. Yes. You should have him over more.
Have that Travis over. He's always brings his dishes in. Like, good kid, that Travis.
What are his parents like? I bet you they're nice people.
Ed has a massive aversion to the sun. And here in the West Coast, Ed would have ran into the same problems that the Walsh twins would have run into, because he is from another place, and he is from a place that people in Beverly Hills do not respect. They would not have him. You're from where? They would not have embraced Ed. Luckily, Ed played football, but also Ed would never have done any of their trips to the beach due to his pasty skin condition and love of 50-degree temperatures.
I like 50.
Due to the fact that it's boring. Yes, the trip to the beach is boring. Yes,
yeah. Again, Ed would not have been on the same wavelength of these kids. He would have found his way at West Beverly, but not with this group.
Had I been dropped into the crew at West Bev, Dylan would have been out of the mix, because Brandon and I would have become good friends.
Yeah,
and he would have realized that he didn't need to spend time with Dylan, that Dylan's a bad influence, that Dylan's somebody that brings a lot of negativity around the Walsh family.
Yes.
And screw that drifter.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. And I would... While Brenda would not have been my first choice, if I were over at the Walsh's a lot and Brenda was around, I mean, maybe, you know, familiarity breeds, familiarity.
Did the Walsh's have a pool house?
I don't know. No, they only had that one barbecue in their backyard that one time. They didn't spend a lot of time in the backyard.
I feel like they had a pool.
It's my understanding
that
you do some of your best work in pool houses.
Long time ago.
I just want to reinforce... I wouldn't want to fit in. These were people who chased after Color Me Bad in high school. I never wanted to fit in with those people.
That was only Donna and David. To be fair, the rest of the gang were at the Peach Pit eating Mega Burgers when they were stalking Color Me Bad.
Yeah. These kids had a terrible diet, by the way.
Yeah,
like Felice, they all should have been obese.
Ate a lot of pie.
They were always at that diner, stuffing their faces with that
weird
diner
thing
food.
Where they would go to the Peach Pit to eat pie when things went bad. When you were a late teenager, early 20s, when things go bad, you use drugs and alcohol.
Normal people do.
Speaking of the Peach Pit, we have another voicemail question. Let's go. I'm not sure who this is from, but he's got an excellent question, and it relates to the Peach Pit. Let's see what this voicemailer has to say.
Ed, Brian, Miss Fancy. Hey, Brian, sorry to hear about your accident. Hope you get better. Hey, my question is for the 90210 experts. With all this talk of James Dean being the porn star crossover into mainstream, yada, yada, was Joe Tata one of those guys? Sounds like a porn star name to me. Verify, please.
Okay. Excellent question from our listener. Joe Tata sounds like a porn star.
Let me stop you
Did
right
Nat
there.
From the Peach Pit do porn?
Joe E. Tata. Thank you.
Yes. Joe E. Tata.
If we're going to insist on accuracy and respect.
My mistake.
Yeah. Right, the E is for engorged. That's the total. That's the total porn star name.
Good one.
Was Joe E. Tata confused that he would get that he, worried that he would become confused with the other Joe Tata, so he added the E?
And if his career had happened later, would he have been cast in The Sopranos?
Good question.
Oh yeah,
maybe he was too well known.
He's a shoo-in for The Sopranos if he came around 10 years later.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He was a failed actor. You remember he appeared in, I believe, a Roger Corman film earlier in his career. I
mean, no one remembers that, but if you say so.
Ed does.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I do. Yeah, I do.
So he had a little bit of the theater bug in him. Sure. So performing is performing.
Yes.
And eventually when you realize that it's not going to happen and that's not going to happen and that's not going to happen, you have this unquenchable desire to have people see what it is you do, and that's something you can
do. It's a TV job. He was on TV for 10 years. He probably put his grandchildren through college from that gig.
Joe E. Tata.
Good for Joe E. Tata. Not sure about his porn career, but still a great question. Here's another question. Characters on the show, I'll start with you, Kato, and we will go around the room. Kate, which character on Beverly Hills 90210, if given the chance, would you like most to punch in the face?
Donna.
Donna. Excellent. I think that would be everybody's answer.
Well, here's the thing. She got punched in the face. So wouldn't you want to punch someone else in the face?
Ray taught her already.
Yes, yeah. She won't do it again. Travis.
To be fair.
Travis, for you. Who would it be for you?
Oh, that's an easy one for me.
Yeah.
David Silver, right in the teeth.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, with the guy you identify with.
Yeah. He'd come up, he'd dance at you, and you'd sock him. Oh, yeah.
He goes side to side. There's that thing where he puts his fingers by both knees.
Travis is dancing.
It's so terrible. And see, he's the guy that I would have, see, if I were part of the crew, I would have turned Brandon and Steve and Dylan against David.
Of course.
And we would have ostracized him and teased him and made him go back to his group.
He
to
was
begin
supposed
with.
To be a guest star.
I love Travis's fantasies. Here he would have ostracized someone, and then during the Karate Kid podcast, he fantasized about like turning against Daniel.
Yes.
He loves fantasizing about being a bully.
Yes, he does. Yes.
Also, let's talk about where Silver is today.
Hold on. We need to get Ed Daly's answer first.
Okay.
Ed Daly, given the opportunity to punch a character from Beverly Hills 90210 in the face, who would it have been?
Well, to me, I have an obvious answer and actually my true answer. Obviously, Felice Martin deserves the punch in the face more than anyone because she was. Donna's
the right
mom,
answer is what it is. It's the correct answer. Yeah.
Donna's mom
what's the name?
Is
Donna's mother.
Felice Martin, okay. But she was awful. She was an anti-Semite. She was everything. However, as bad as she was, the guy that needs to be punched in the face is Joe Bradley, the quarterback for the
Condors,
the California University Condors, who, when Donna, the virgin, finally says, you know what, I'm giving it up. And he's dating her for a while. So it's not like, oh, he just
wasn't
into her.
Sitch.
He was into her. And he cuts her off. He goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm a virgin. He's a college quarterback. He's sort of a Pac-10 quarterback.
They were
going
to go to the Rose Bowl that year.
Wow, the California Condors.
Yes.
And he turns down sex.
What
he deserved to be punched in the
face. Agreed. That's a great answer.
Can I quick aside?
Yes.
And maybe, Ed, you might be the right person to answer this. I've always kind of gone back and forth. California University, I was never quite sure whether they were knocking off SC or UCLA. It was a very interesting mix of the two.
But weren't they blue and gold like UCLA?
No, they weren't. They were.
It was a make-believe team. It was kind of a mix between the two.
Yeah. So from the distance, which one was?
USC. I thought it was USC.
But it was an academic place.
That's
UCLA.
USC. You never saw Asians on their campus, so it couldn't have been UCLA.
Great point. Wow.
End of discussion.
I just Googled Felice Martin. I now remember she was awful.
Would you like to punch her in the face?
You know, I kind of wanted to punch Brandon in the face, too, because he was always such a smug know-it-all. Telling everyone what to do and being the moral compass, and he was just really annoying.
Almost every cast member deserved to be punched in the face.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, agreed.
We're talking about David Silver. Here's a question from our dear friend, Thousand Steps. He asks, why did Howard fire Silver from the radio station for meth when Howard was a meth head himself? No honor among thieves? Travis Rogers?
Well, see, the difference was Howard was an older classman with a ponytail. So he clearly understood the student radio vibe, which was ponytails and meth mixed into your orange juice is how he took it.
He
would sprinkle it
so
into
bad
his
for
orange
the stomach.
Juice.
The orange juice is bad enough.
It's calories and everything else.
Yeah.
But Howard was able to keep his meth use under control to perform his duties. He didn't fire David for being a meth addict. He fired David for being a bad DJ. That's why he got fired.
Great point. It wasn't the meth.
It wasn't the meth. The meth led him to become a bad DJ, but it was the fact that he didn't show up for his work that got him fired.
This is one of the few episodes I'm familiar with, and I happen to know that David Silver, he started using meth, and maybe just truncated for time, they made him an addict that was shooting meth between his toes, like 5 days after the first time he ever tried it.
Also, I have a question.
Was
a little weird.
Is that not how that works?
They went quick with the storyline. They didn't have time for the in-between stages.
Kate McManus?
Do you think that if David Silver had have just been into speed and not meth, his DJ career would have soared?
That's a good point. I think meth is speed, though. I think, yes.
Remember what was on.
I feel like is different.
Oh, yeah.
But we call it ice in Australia.
He went from being a random meth head DJ to Howard Stern for a quick stretch.
Like, yes.
He became like this shock jock who's like, yeah, dump your shitty ex and like stuff like that.
Really?
Like, he went at it.
He had
a stretch as Howard Stern, like on a hit radio show where people are asking advice.
And then he became a music video producer with Donna that they shot with their VHS got for Christmas.
So along those lines, it seemed like David Silver, he was really kissed in. Brian Austin Green, he's not supposed to be a main character.
No.
But he weasels his way in there. And eventually, most of the better writing, the best storylines are David Silver's storylines.
Because they couldn't go dark with the other characters. Right. That's what it was. They didn't mind if they darked him out.
But in the course of the show,
they could put him in baggy jeans.
They only got dark with Dylan when he came back after he left the show. He came back and then he was
hooked up with the mob's daughter.
Oh, I didn't realize this. Whoa. I didn't know this.
Now, Rebecca Gayhart. That's why he left.
Tony Marchette.
That's right.
I like that Brian Austin Green bag has gone from 90210 to his last TV appearance on the reality show Flipped.
Right, flipping out.
Flipping out, rather.
Where he gets his house remodeled.
Where he's remodeling his house, but it's clear that his marriage is, real-life marriage is on the rocks. And things are not going well.
He's a decade younger than him.
And then, you know, a month later, they announce their divorce.
Was there a single character, I'm trying to think, and I think there might be one, was there one single character on that show that did not battle some sort of addiction? Because Brando, you're thinking Brandon's the one that didn't, right?
Donna.
Gambling. Brandon had gambling.
He had a gambling issue.
Brandon had a gambling issue.
Dylan was sober, wasn't he?
No, he kept coming on and off. Oh. And Sanders got into the weed a little
bit. What was Brenda into?
Brenda, I think that's the answer. I think Brenda was the only one that didn't have some sort of compulsion.
She was just into attention.
Brenda got fired after season three.
The creator's daughter, she had no problems.
She didn't. Yeah, you're right.
She couldn't lose her virginity.
Yeah, she's frigid.
No one wanted to fuck her.
You, Ed. You say she had no problems, to which I counter that face.
And that boob job.
Huge issue.
That she got. Okay. Her father is one of the most powerful, most successful television producers
right.
in mm-hmm. history.
She couldn't get good tits.
I would imagine he has a revolving door in his office of beautiful starlets that come in with huge, beautifully constructed breasts.
Go to my guy.
And he sent his daughter to a butcher.
Yeah.
How does that happen? Yes.
First ballot in the Weird Tits Hall of Fame.
Yes.
It's so weird.
Well, I will say that it is very hard to do a good boob job on someone that skinny.
She went too big.
And it never looks right because I have friends that have tried.
Right. She went too big. And she is...
You always have a weird refund gap.
She is the personification
a
of
weird,
the term. What?
Refund gap.
What's that?
I don't know what that
means.
That's
when
where
your
you have that
tits
weird
are
gap
so far apart.
Yeah.
That you have a weird
you
gap.
You should go ask for your money back.
Oh.
You've got, he's giving you a refund gap.
Oh. Okay. I'm up to speed.
Got you. Okay. Here,
part of the bad.
Let's go.
I will use that phrase by the end of the day today in my regular life.
Let's go to another question. This is from Ish, who once showed up in the lobby of Travis Rogers' radio station unannounced. Rank these Beverly Hills 90210 ladies. Kelly Martin, Kelly Taylor, Donna Martin, Andrea Zuckerman, Valerie Malone, what up? Brenda Walsh. Ed, I'll let you go first. That's a lot of names to remember. Who rank those? Give me a top three.
Well, do I have to rank between them? Like, can I pick other characters? Because Claire Arnold isn't on that list.
She's not on that list, Ed.
You have to go from the list.
Don't go rogue here. We've determined right. Clara Arnold is far and away the best.
Well, there's one. Well, anyway, go
Emily
ahead.
Valentine. We
no. Keats.
No.
Keats is oh, no. She's
Vanessa Marcell.
Oh, yeah.
No, she was hot.
That's what I was going to say. Vanessa Marcell would definitely be on
so
that.
She's number one.
Gina Kincaid. I would have Gina Kincaid, then Claire Arnold, then Tony Marchette, then Valerie Malone.
I don't know any of these people.
All right. Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Oh, right. I like her. I like her. I'm a big fan of hers.
She's just Tiffany Thiessen now. She's dropped the Amber.
She's no longer Tat.
I found those big cheeks very disconcerting.
She has a big head.
Yeah.
So in the Beverly Hills 90210 world, she's one of the best.
On this list, Valerie Malone is the number one answer.
Absolutely.
She's the number one on this answer. And then the reality is the bottom four. Valerie's a good number one. The bottom four are terrible.
Right. Well, you put Kelly's Donna's there. It's Valerie.
But to me, Kelly, you know, she was attractive before she got the Peter Pan haircut. But but Kelly was only a little better than Andrea as a character. She was terrible.
But who would you want to bang, I think, is more the direction.
Can we go back to Valerie Malone for a second?
Yeah, let's go back
to her. So she was by far the most attractive. She was by far the most adventurous. She had all the appetites. Like, whatever you wanted, she was down. Right. She was good. Valerie, she was screwing around with married guys.
She ran a club.
She had... Yeah. Whatever you wanted, did she like the little toot? She was into whatever it is you wanted to do. However, and I'm not going to be able to use Reef End Gap here, but I have an issue with her breasts as well.
Really?
They're too cone shaped, and I don't know if it was a bra choice.
It's a bra thing. It probably was.
I don't
know.
It's they were looked like when you watched Mrs. C from Happy Days.
Oh my
God.
Oh
so
yeah, she had wire bras. Oh,
right. Yeah. So, but it's this cone that looks like a snow cone that's been inverted and put in there. I don't like that look. I like round. I like a teardrop, and this was not that.
Who's noticing Mrs. C's tits?
That's what I was thinking.
I'm just saying that Miss by the way, you go back Marion Ross in the Happy Days.
Travis, this is being recorded.
I'm fine with this.
Oh my God!
No, Mr. C clearly knew what he was
taking
doing.
Care of
I'm just looking at the cast list.
I think it was a bra choice. I don't think she had banana loopers.
But I
think she had regular tits, but she had pointy.
Here's the thing, Ed. And not that I've really spent a lot of time looking into this, or maybe I have. If you look at all of the pictures of her, this is how she rolls. She's choosing this.
She chooses that kind of bra.
It's a weird choice. They're not. The refund gap is non-existent. They're being like, because she's not. She's full figured.
Yes.
But they're not the way you would expect a full figured woman to be shaped.
Yes.
And it's one of those things that takes you out of the moment because I'm trying to figure out what's going on with that.
Do you think it ruins it? Do you think she potentially had those nipples that look like suction cups on top of the breast tissue? Because if so, I'm out.
Her shape was pleasing yet odd.
Interesting.
Yes.
Kate, you have a list there.
That's not nipple shame on this show. Okay. I'm just looking at a list.
I'm not into those suction.
But just to clarify, Andrea is number five on any list.
I'm into like the
obviously.
I'm into like the
Gabrielle Carteris.
Yeah. She had a talk show for a period of time.
Real quick.
No, I have a quick question.
Okay, all right.
I'm just going to cast list. Hilary Swank was on
one season.
Yeah, very toothy.
Also, I've just remembered Lindsay Price. She was attractive.
Yes,
she was very pretty. She actually ended up marrying a friend of
she's the Asian one. Yes,
a good friend of a friend of mine, Curtis Stone, who's an Australian chef. They're married now, and they have a couple of kids.
So
do you know him, Curtis Stone?
You have
to tell him to chill out on the hair dye.
Plink. Yeah, I don't know him, but he's very good friends with a former friend of mine.
If you guys didn't hear that sound, that's Kate McManus dropping names.
Yeah, that sounded like name dropping.
Lindsay
Price has gotten better looking. She's pulling the Steenburgen.
Yeah. Oh, she's like a Steenburgen.
Yeah, she's getting better looking with age. She was good enough looking, but her character was someone who is just domesticating Sanders.
Okay. At the risk of being somewhat guilty of stereotyping, is Lindsay Price doing Agra commercials now where she's laying on that shade lounge looking into the camera like, my man now knows how to take care of that's her, right? That's not her? That is her.
I Googled her. It's not. She's been on I felt racist for Googling that.
She's, in the last like 3-4 years.
She's okay. She's attractive.
She's good looking.
Not my deal. Not my deal. Okay. Speaking of that, we're talking about Andrea Zuckerman. Ugh. Ed Daly. How fucking old is that guy? Andrea Zuckerman, obviously much older than high school age, doing the show. Give me your best guess. How fucking old is that guy? Andrea Zuckerman, Gabrielle Carteris.
All right, so she, like, take away, what, a quarter century? She's at least a double nickel right now.
You're saying 55? That's your guess, 55?
I'm going to say 56. 56.
56 years old.
I'm going to go higher. I bet you she's close to 60. I'm going to go 58.
58. Well, both of you have just guessed older than my mother, by the way. Kate McManus, Gabrielle Carteris, Andrea Zuckerman. How fucking old is that guy?
I remember thinking that she had to be at least 15 years older than me.
Yeah, yes. Which would make her...
And I'm going to go like 54.
Kate McManus. Nailed it on the head. January, she's about to have a birthday. January 2nd, 1961. Gabrielle Carteris is approaching her 55th birthday. She's 54 years old, minus 25. That makes her 29. A high school sophomore.
I would also like to point out that as a 54-year-old, she looks like a bad 54. Wow. Like she's a beat-up 54. Well,
who's seen her recently? No one.
A 54-year-old who needs a lot of sleep.
I may or may not Google these people periodically to see what they're up to.
Wow. Okay, guys, we have another voicemail. I think this one comprises a few questions, and this guy goes deep. This is at Judy Bloom from Twitter. He reached out. He also comports himself to be an expert in Beverly Hills 90210. So he's got some very episode-specific, storyline-specific questions. Let's have a listen to what he has to say.
Where to begin? I have to ask. There's an episode. It's season 2, season 3, maybe. And it would seem that Andrea and Brenda are both enrolled in this acting class at the high school. It's during the height of the summer. They're taking a class.
Cat on a hot tin roof.
And their teacher, this guy Chris, who I think, by the way, plays a young Elvis Presley in some terrible TV movie, he chooses Andrea over Brenda. What foolishness? What are you talking about? How does this happen, number one?
He has to date inside his relationship.
Good point.
Who had the worst clothing on the show? Was it Steve? I contend it might have been Steve Sanders, although Steve is also the funniest guy, so maybe somewhat intentional. Finally, too, I have to ask, if you look at the course of the characters over the, 10 seasons or so, who's the worst person? Who's done the most horrible, done the most terrible things to other people, been the most selfish, been an outright ass? I would contend it's Valerie, but I would still like to hear your take. So please, answer these questions.
Okay, guys.
I felt a lot of outrage.
Round
in that.
Two. Well, Valerie Malone. Valerie Malone wasn't on the show long enough to be the worst person. But let's go around the room. We'll start with Ed Daly. Worst person in the history of the show. Who is the worst person? Not the worst character. Not the worst.
The character that did
line.
The worst. Yeah. Thing.
Worst human being.
Who's the biggest asshole? Go ahead.
Without question, Kelly.
Kelly
she
Taylor.
Was a whore. She slept with everyone's boyfriend, yet was not afraid to call. Valerie and Gina whores and sluts anytime like they slept with her boyfriend. She was terrible. She was judgmental.
That's
yet
true. She was.
She was so judgmental, yet she was the one who joined a cult and started snorting booger sugar with her $100 bills. She was very preachy and she was awful.
Interesting. I didn't expect that from Ed. Kelly Taylor, Travis Rogers, worst character, worst person on the show.
I think that Ed said it earlier. Felice Martin, I think we're overlooking because she was an anti-Semite. She was a racist. She was every terrible thing you could ever be. But
she was a wrestling heel for a mom.
she really was.
I mean, how often was she on the show?
More than you might think.
A lot.
And the hypocrisy. So we revealed that she wouldn't let Donna give it up. Yeah. And then we found out that she was having an affair at the Belle Lodge Hotel.
Oh.
That's so, right. Yeah. She was a real hypocrite. Right.
Interesting.
The Color Me Bad episode.
Right. Yes. So, wow. So
landmark episode.
I'm not going to say her because I think that she's almost off the board because she's too right. Kelly's an interesting choice. I would offer Steve Sanders as the answer to this question.
Whoa.
And here's why.
Wow.
Steve Sanders committed a legitimate academic fraud at West Beverly where he went into the computer and switched his grades, which is not just bad for him, but it screws it up for everybody else.
I mean, Ferris Bueller did the same thing, and he's a hero.
He was accused of date rape at California University.
But he didn't do it.
Well, he still
two sides to every story.
He was in the midst of another scandal. Yeah. He was constantly involved in shady financial dealings, whether it was him running a club or him being a manager.
He learned that from his dad, Rush Sanders.
He was
Rush was a shady guy.
Yeah.
He was constantly abusing alcohol. You know, it happens, but he was somebody that did not understand that there's a line to do these things. And he was a trust fund baby. Yeah. Everybody hates that guy.
Drove a Corvette to high school at 16.
Had a house on Malibu. Yes. Was able to do all of these things, got courtside Laker tickets, and never earned any of it. And yet treated other people that didn't have access to these things
as
lesser
as
people.
As
he's a pretty bad guy.
He had an interesting arc. Kate McManus, worst person on the show.
I don't know. I don't remember, but listening to all these, I think Sanders was pretty douchey.
You're with Sanders?
Are you kidding me?
Felice Martin was awful.
He was my favorite.
No question.
I identified
and Kelly
Melissa
was.
Sanders.
I agree with that too. She was a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
She
Kelly
sucked.
Was a bitch, huh? Interesting.
Yeah.
Because she was the good girl
she,
on the show.
She was the original.
She originally stole
Dylan from Brenda.
Yeah, that was the first. That was her first move, and Dylan comes back at the very end. He's been supposedly living with Brenda in London.
Yeah.
He comes back at the very end. To tell Kelly, they sit on the beach, and he's
cash.
Like, "Cause I missed you."
Yeah.
So she gets him in the end.
Yeah.
She must have done things that he missed.
Worst, obviously.
Obviously.
Hey guys, I want to jump in here and talk about our good friend Herman Marshall Whiskey. I know I have told you before, but I can't say it enough. It's Christmas time. I don't know about you guys, but there is nothing more exciting. You hit a certain age, and you don't want Star Wars figurines. You don't want model trucks. You don't want a new baseball glove. You're a man. You want booze. And you want good booze. You have grown to know what tastes good. And of course, I know what tastes good, and it's Herman Marshall Whiskey. So guys, get with it. Herman Marshall Whiskey, smooth Texas bourbon. Worst wardrobe. We'll go the other direction. We'll start with Kate McManus. Kate, who had the worst wardrobe on the show?
That's a hard one. I mean, Andrea's like the obvious choice. She looked like my English lit teacher when I was a senior. Like, exactly.
But see, here's the
and
thing,
dressed
Kate,
like it, too.
She would have taken that as a compliment. Like, you feel like you've insulted her, but she's looking at you like, well, thank you, Kate. That's very nice of you to say.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. David Silver had pretty bad clothes. It's like baggy. There's like
wearing,
those baggy Unco jeans.
He's wearing
Junko. What was it, Junko?
Yeah. And Cavaricci's. Like, everything that was
Cavaricci.
Bad. Everything that was bad, he was into. Overalls, all the above.
Yeah, I was kind of into, like, Steve Sanders' like, 80s villain outfits and stuff. I was like, that's
like
pretty
that
tight. But
he wore dolphin shorts unironically.
Yes.
You would dress like that today.
Absolutely. Travis Rogers, your thoughts. Who would you say was the worst, had the worst style?
Brandon.
On the show. Brandon, interesting.
And here's the thing.
It's very, very weird because if I looked at a picture of Brandon right now, any picture, I'd be like, oh, that guy dresses like Travis.
Which is not a good thing, which is not something you want to do. He wears high top basketball shoes at the beach with short, like tennis shorts and a tucked in shirt with a braided belt. And this is his, I'm trying to look good. I'm here to party and have a good time. Basketball shorts and high socks at the beach.
Unbelievable.
That's pretty much the end of that.
Unbelievable.
So by the way, you know who had an underrated, terrible wardrobe that we just kind of gloss over it, but upon further viewings, it pops like crazy? Cindy Walsh's gear is off the charts.
She's a bad dresser.
Horrible.
Wow.
Matronly doesn't even begin to cover what it is. Like, Jim clearly did not have a lot of libido. because Cindy was not putting it out there.
She definitely had a mom look. That'd be interesting because she looked to be about 70 years old
when
the start of the show. Yeah. Carol Potter is the actress's name. I would like to know how, and of course it's the first, when you look it up, it is the first recommendation is age. Ed Daly, we'll start with you. How fucking old is this guy, Brandon Walsh's mom?
Well, if she's now, she's 65.
She's 65 years old. You're calling her 65.
But that, what about my worst clothing?
Oh, I'm sorry. Ed. Yes.
You missed the clear one. After his summer in Texas, Scott Scanlon showed up in the 10-gallon hat and the bolo tie. Without question,
I forgot about that.
Nothing wrong with that.
That was pretty hot, the only thing
that saved his horrible clothing choices was his choice in what to do with the gun at the birthday party.
No. I liked after Scott had his accident that his mother's coping mechanism was to throw a lot of pool parties.
Wow.
That was interesting. Wow. And David was forced to come to them because he felt guilty.
Yeah, it was his buddy. It was Scott Scanlon.
So your kid blows his head off and it's like, you know what, let's have a pool party.
I wonder how Scott Scanlon's life went on after that.
That was
season two, right? He the actor gets killed off in season two, and then he sees all these fucking assholes. He sees that silver guy who was Brian Austin Green was supposed to be a guest star.
Yeah, he's like, he was my equal.
Yes,
they were the nerds. Remember, they're out on Halloween and they were going to throw eggs at people. And then because the cool kids pulled up and said, hey, David, why don't you come with us? He left Scott hanging. And that's when Scott should have known that the next script was coming or old Scott was taking one.
Yeah, absolutely. He should have known. Okay.
He's the only actor never mind. I just remembered it. I was going to say he's the only one, real name I don't know, but it's Douglas Emerson. It just popped into my head.
Wow, excellent job. Okay. Yeah. Trav, how fucking old is this guy, Cindy Walsh? How old is she today? She looked 69 years old in 1990.
25 years ago. I'll say she's 67.
Kate McManus, your thoughts?
About my mom's age, 67.
She is 67 years old today, exactly. May 21st, 1948, which makes her 42, younger than Travis Rogers, barely older than me.
That's shocking.
When she was playing the Walsh matron.
That she's younger than my wife is shocking. Back then is shocking.
It's shocking.
Because Susan looks 20 years younger than that
Susan
woman.
Susan is far more youthful than Cindy.
Of course.
She could have... That could have been Susan's mother
of
at
course.
That point.
Also, we need to address the fact...
60 years old.
That Cindy and Jim were the most square parents.
Oh, yeah.
Ever.
Well, they're from Minnesota. They had Midwestern values.
They were huge squares, and they annoyed me.
Jim Walsh's Midwestern values in the first Seinfeldian mock draft.
I remember that. I recall that. Okay, another question from a listener. This is also from Thousand Steps, who appears to be just as big a nerd as you guys regarding the show. He asks, how do you think Colin and Danny Five handled prison, and do you think Brandon and Steve still dabble in bounty hunting? I honestly don't know what that means.
Neither what?
I don't know what that means. Ed Daly, I'll let you answer that first. Who are Colin and Danny Five, and do you think they did okay in prison?
Well, Colin was Kelly's cokehead boyfriend. I would guess he turned on Danny Five, his dealer, and got a reduced sentence
and went
to rehab. So I think he's all right. Danny Five was like that real wispy mustache kind of guy, like probably not good. And then as far as bounty hunting, I'm guessing Valerie Malone went that route because she worked a bounty hunting thing with J.J. Jones.
Oh, my God.
That's right,
oh
J.J. When he went to Mexico.
Played by Wings Hauser. Father of Cole Hauser from Dazed and Confused.
Wow. Whoa.
So
unbelievable.
I think Colin, I think you're right. I think he probably ratted early to get out. But Colin was a habitual offender. He was not somebody that was going to get squared away. So he would have gone on the inside soon.
Yeah.
And he would have been the bitch in prison. See, he would have
just, yeah, he was,
you're saying,
beautiful.
He's in prison for something else.
He was a very pretty target.
As Jason Stewart would say, was he gorgeous?
He was gorgeous, yeah, and he would have rolled easily because he didn't want to fight. He's an artist. He's not a fighter.
I had to Google him. He dated Kelly Taylor during her short mom hair.
Thin eyebrow face. He was one of those guys that guest starred around on a lot of shows.
He was an artist who
was dreaming.
His only good art came when he was high on cocaine, so he started to use more cocaine.
He loved Clinton.
Rob Mays is the actor's name.
Yeah, that's a lot of people's story.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was a bad character because he created drama between Kelly and
season
Donna.
Season 4.
Why am I blanking on her name? Valerie.
Right. Interesting.
Oh, yeah, he dated Valerie, right?
Yeah.
Valerie knew him from, like, a former life. Like, they never explained it, but, like, she knew him
Buffalo. Back in the day.
I remember that guy. I remember seeing that guy around. Okay. Favorite episodes. Kate McManus watching down in Australia and eventually here in the States. Do you have a favorite episode? Was it the Color Me Bad episode? Was it the time the Flaming Lips played the Peach Pit?
That really happened?
The Pea Pitch After Dark?
Yes, that was it.
Have they been around that long?
Yes.
God, I'm shocked to hear that. I'd have to really have my memory jogged to be able to
tell you. You're opting out.
I'm going to ask these two guys, and they're
both going to have answers. Travis Rogers, go ahead. Tell me, what is your favorite episode of Beverly Hills 90210?
I liked it when it was the first episode of the season before they were going to enroll at California University, and they had to get all of the storyline out of the way before they could get into all the stupid stuff.
I would imagine, as not a fan of the show, when they went, also, first of all, they spent 5 years in high school.
Right.
That was a little weird.
Sure.
Then they go to college. Would that not have been the jump the shark moment for the show? It couldn't have been as good once
show
they
got better when they're in college.
Wow. I agree.
It improved.
I agree with that.
Okay, back to your favorite episode.
So I think Brandon is going to go to CU and
California University.
Andrea is on the fence whether she's going to go to Yale or CU. Brenda's going to go to Minnesota. Dylan's gone. Kelly and Don are both going to CU. David had, remember, he had to take a crash course so he could graduate with them, so he could go forward. So
Brendan's gone to London to some acting academy.
Right. David was a
senior. No, that came later, because remember, he skipped his senior year.
Okay. Yeah. David was a year younger, but they couldn't have him in high school and everyone else in college.
And I love that Andrea has to choose between CU and Yale.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Hard decision.
So definitely not USC.
CU, the same place that Steve Sanders got into, who committed a massive academic fraud to just graduate from high school. There are some plot holes.
Rush Sanders probably pulled some strings.
Well, Rush Sanders was a member of the Keg House when he was at CU.
Yes.
So
he was the original shot call.
Keg House?
Yeah. Oh, no, Steve Sanders was a member of the Keg House. So that was the beginning of all of this, and it was what launched them into the second phase of this show, which was their university year. So that's that was my favorite one.
So this would have been the first episode of season 6.
It had one of the great plot devices that they would use frequently, where they would try to put Brandon in a situation where he would have a love interest in a woman. Not a kid, but a woman.
Yeah.
So this agent's daughter came and tried to mace him as he was waking up from a stupor from the night before.
Yeah.
And she was clearly much too old for the role that she was supposed to be there. But
like everyone on the show.
Because he's an adult, but he's a freshman in college.
Yeah.
He's going to try to have sex with the 36-year-old agent who just stumbled into the room.
Did he bang her?
No. No, they realized it wasn't going to work out.
He should have, but no.
Absolutely. Right. Okay. Ed Daly, so Travis likes, I assume, episode 1 of season 6, when they go to college, when everything's wrapped up from high school and they move on to the next phase. Ed Daly, tell me your favorite episode of Beverly Hills 90210.
Well, I get that these two answers are going to make me seem like a worse dude than I should be, but one, when Scanlan shot himself. That was, I enjoyed that.
That was on season 2, right? That was very early in the show.
Maybe 3. After the summer episodes when they didn't even have Scott Scanlan.
He was only on 18 episodes, so it would have been in the second
I think he was season 1, but season 2 were the summer episodes where they had already been like, we'll call you if we need you.
Right,
And then they're like, oh, what were you doing over the summer? And he was in Texas and then he shot himself. Right. But a tie with that is, I don't like domestic violence, but I kind of like when Pruitt threw Donna down the stairs.
Good episode.
It's the right answer. Now, Ed is right, because he kept pounding on her and she kept going back, right. And
which is how it happens.
Which is exactly how it happens. And then Kelly, or I should say Valerie, saw her get thrown down, and it was all the classic, no, I slipped, no, you don't understand, he told me to stop. It was all of those terrible domestic violence cliches that you hear.
Does anybody remember, because Ray Pruitt, played by Jamie Walters.
Yeah, how do you talk to an angel?
Does anybody remember his hit song? Clearly you guys do. How do you talk to an angel? He was singing about Donna Martin. Yeah. That's
I read one of those. An angel. I read one of those. Where Are They Now?
He's a firefighter.
He would perform in bars and people would be like, fuck you. Yeah, we hate domestic violence. People would be like yelling at him. Like they didn't realize he was playing a role.
That's pretty great.
He also had one tee because that's all his mama could afford. Yeah.
This is known. Ray Pruitt with only one tee.
By the way, Ray Pruitt's mom was a chick who used to be on Benson, who is also Michael Keaton's ex-wife.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know, in the Oscars or whatever. Chills
right there. Continue, Ed. You're amazing.
When Keaton was, I guess it was Golden Globes or one of those speeches, and he's talking about his son. His son is with Ray Pruitt's mom.
Ooh. The actress that played Ray Pruitt's mom.
Yeah, that was
Ray actual mom.
That was the former Mrs. Keaton.
Wow, fantastic.
I want to go back to something he said when Scott Sandlin went to Texas, and then he came back with the guns and the cowboy hats and the bolo ties.
That's cool.
Whenever they needed to irreparably alter a character's backstory, they would send them to Texas.
Yeah. Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Who else went to Texas?
Donna Martin went to Texas one summer because she was going
to get an abortion.
Quite the opposite, frankly. She was going to enter the debutante circle. And so they sent her to Texas so she could debut in Texas. And they were a part of that. Yes.
Was that even a thing?
And then she brought Deshaun Hardell back to the house. And that was a non-starter with police.
Oh, because that sounds like a
Deshaun Hardell.
Chocolate Thunder.
That didn't go well.
I got that right. That's right, Ed?
Yes, you're correct.
Wow. Okay.
So if you went to Texas on 902.0, something bad things was about to happen.
Well, should we devote a minute to Scott Scanlon and his hat?
The Laker hat. Yeah.
He wore a Laker hat, but he wore it up on top of his head with his bangs coming out of it. That was not a style. Who was
way back?
Who was
way back?
Oh, it's Travis's. Travis raises his hand because it was his style of wearing a hat.
I may or may not have done that exact.
He wore
same
that
thing.
Laker hat like Adebisi wore his.
That's
hat
right. How did it stay on? How did that hat stay on? Was it clipped? Was it clipped to his head?
No, I would do the same thing. I wore my Arcadia High School baseball cap with the bill at 45 degrees. And my hair in front.
You would wear your Arcadia baseball hat but not when you were in the game or at practice.
Yeah.
Like you wear it around campus.
How else is somebody going to know that I'm on the team, Ryan?
I mean, I feel like.
No. I didn't wear it on campus. I would wear it
around.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Interesting.
So the answer is yes, people did do that.
Yeah. Clearly, since the actors were all in their late 20s, so were the people that were producing the show, because no one looked normal. They didn't dress normally. They were all completely out of their element in terms of style, including Scott Scanlon's hat on the top of his head.
I dug it.
Okay.
Well, and then he traded it for the 10-gallon hat.
Yeah, he did. I like that.
Ten-gallon hole.
I feel like I'm gonna need to rewatch. Isn't it on like SoapNet or something like?
It's on Pop Network.
Pop Network.
But everything's on YouTube.
I have a question for you guys. What character appeared in the most number of episodes?
Oh, that had to be. Oh, Brandon left it.
No, yeah, it's not him. It's got to be Kelly or Donna. It's Kelly or Donna.
Hold on. Oh, I have it here. I have it here.
That's one.
Well, it's got to be a tie because they never left.
Okay, hold on. Right. Hold on. Before let's let Ed. You're saying Kelly and Donna.
Well, yeah,
tied.
They both were on the show the entire
time. Travis Rogers, do you agree with that?
Yes.
Kate, I have it here. Do you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Tori Spelling, 291 episodes.
That's right.
Kelly Taylor, 290. Steve Sanders, 290. Yep.
Donna one episode.
And then fourth is Bag. Brian Austin Green, 289.
Yeah, 289. 291, 290.
Jason Priestley only has 244.
Because he left. He missed like the last two seasons.
Yeah.
Why did they write him off?
He had enough money.
He wanted to go race cars.
And he nearly died.
He had a bad accident.
How'd that work out for you, Brando?
I was just Googling some of his love interests. Remember Emily Valentine?
Can we spend some time on her?
Let's talk about Emily Valentine.
All right.
Was she the short-haired blonde?
Yeah, she was the short-haired blonde that came from out of town. She was the new kid, and she fell
like
in with the
peroxide blonde.
Yeah, she
like
looked like Roxette.
She was
remember
okay.
Roxette?
Yeah, Roxette.
So
was
she kind of had a little Roxette thing going on. And she showed up and she fell in with Brandon. She was bright and she was part of the Blaze. She was the kid that you. And then all of a sudden, she took Brandon to a rave and we found out she was a little sketchy.
She
drugged him on euphoria.
And you knew. Which was ecstasy.
Right, no, it was euphoria. But and so you knew where to get it because the guy in the club had a big four on his shirt. Yeah. Very subtle.
Subtle. Yes.
Yeah. And what, Travis, what was the code word to get into the party?
It was an egg. You needed an egg,
yes.
Right?
That's right.
I'd like to exchange an egg.
Oh, my God. You guys are such nerds. She
turns out, they took an advantage. Instead of just making her a crazy ex who Brandon had sex with, and then he was upset because he had sex under false pretenses where he was on euphoria, and then she tried to burn down the homecoming float and the Walsh residence, and then instead of deciding to make her a total crackpot, they just gave her mental illness. So they kind of punted on that. They really could have gone to a place like, you know what,
worse.
An opportunity to explore mental illness, and now instead of it being awesome, it's like just kind of sad.
Yeah, it's kind of ruined it. It's depressing.
Well, think about that. She was the worst actress, but she was surrounded by some bad actors.
That's an interesting question. Let's put that out to the group. Who was the worst actor on the show? Ed Daly, I'll allow you to go first.
Well, I did a column a couple weeks ago about the Thanksgiving episodes of 90210.
Yeah.
And I watched an episode where she was like, Brandon, you know I'll always be true to you.
This is Emily
like,
Valentine.
She was horrible. Yeah. But the worst actor of all, Mel Silver.
David Silver's dad.
And my proof Dr. that Silver. He's not not only is he a bad actor, but after he was done with the show, he left showbiz and he's like the play-by-play announcer for Duke basketball.
Get the fuck out of here. That's a great job. Mel Silver.
Is that true?
He's not only a shithead in acting, he's a shithead by supporting the shittiest shithead
He hates Duke. He hates Duke so much.
That's awesome.
Travis Rogers, who was the worst actor on the show?
There were virtually no good actors. Like, if you look at these people's careers after the fact, very few of them actually ever worked
worked.
I would say Kathleen Robertson is probably
Stop it.
She can act. Jason Priestley at least
I'm saying she's a legit actor.
I like it when she acts.
Priestley gets work.
She'll do like arty.
Thiessen was good too. She was good.
Yes. And beyond that,
Saved by the Bell.
And Shannon Doherty could act. So
she's never worked.
Tori Spelling was the worst actor. Yeah.
Steve Sanders was the worst.
What?
Ian Ziering was.
My God.
Everything is. Watch his facial expressions.
Oh my God.
Everything is turned up to 10. There is no subtlety in anything he does. If he's outraged,
just Google
he goes, what?
Just Google the.
I'm very outraged.
You're right.
Unbelievable.
That was a good rendition.
Wow.
Just quickly. Just Google the Dick's Dead episode with Steve
Brandon.
Sanders.
Dick's
Mourning
Dead.
The loss of Dick.
Who's Dick?
I'm shocked. Brandon was
Travis
the
knows.
Quarterback?
No.
It
no.
says here
no, Brandon never played.
Priestley was the group's off-screen quarterback. What does that mean?
Well, off-screen, like, he's the leader of the group.
Yeah, he'd be like,
he'd be like,
I got us a table at Hyde.
Yeah, he's Canadian.
Also,
he doesn't have
it says here in season one, after one of his drinks was spiked at a party, he briefly experienced a problem with drinking. Like, what?
Well, he got in an accident with Mondale, and that was the end of his drinking.
Mondale, by the way, was what he called his car.
Right, because they're from Minnesota, Walter Mondale.
He had a Mustang.
Right.
No, well, he had Mustang after he broke up Mondale.
I don't understand how he got a drinking problem because he had his drink spiked.
He had one night of drinking.
Someone gave him some alcohol, and then he became an alcoholic.
Just like one day of gambling made him a gambling
right.
Yeah, just
that's,
like,
that's what he
just
did.
Like
he was one a huge
line
loser.
Of, one line of speed made David Silver slam it between his toes the next day at the radio station.
I have a question for our experts.
Put it out
on
there.
The panel.
Put it out to the guys.
What was the name of the high school paper that Brandon was
the Blaze.
Beverly Blaze?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that would be hard.
Okay, one more. It's come time. I think we should wrap this up, but yeah. Before we do.
No more questions, no more emails
We've gone through the emails and the voicemails. Excellent job, guys. I really appreciate everyone that reached out. That was very special. That was important to the show. It made the show having the contributions of the listeners. But I got a question. You take everyone that was ever on 90210. And I'm talking Valerie Malone. I'm talking Claire.
Arnold.
Gina Kincaid.
Everyone. Every Ray Pruitt. Every ancillary character. Everyone you can think of. Everyone that's ever been on the show. And you heard them all into Thunderdome. And in Thunderdome, around Thunderdome, there's maces. There's chains. There's machetes, there's samurai swords, there's every kind of...
Are there nunchucks?
Nunchucks, nunchucka. They're there, Chinese throwing stars. Anything you can think of, any kind of weaponry that you can imagine is there besides guns, they're all splayed about, and the entire cast, entire history of 90210 is hauled into Thunderdome.
So like the Hunger Games.
And only one can leave. It's a battle royale.
This is actually the Hunger Games.
I've never seen the Hunger Games.
Hunger Games is a ripoff of Battle Royale.
This is the plot of
just
the
so you know,
Games.
Japanese book, Battle
say,
Royale.
I will say this. I would like to have sex with Jennifer Lawrence. I find her attractive.
Sure. Yeah. Just do people not?
No, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just.
There's
I
no
just want to
opposing voice on
okay,
that. One.
I just want to put it out there. I just want to put it out there that I'm in the camp that would.
In case she listens.
Yeah, she might be interested. She's also on my list.
He's of the Colin Coward school of creating a debate that wasn't there. Call me crazy, yeah. But I call the Golden State Warriors a good shooting basketball team.
Hey, I might be in the minority here, but I'd fuck Jennifer Lawrence. Okay. The point is, here's the question. In the battle royale of Beverly Hills 90210, all men enter. One man leaves. Who walks out victorious, covered in blood? Ed Daly, we'll start with you.
My first instinct was to go with Tony Marchette, the man, because he's strapped to the teeth. He's mafia boss.
Right.
But then I remembered... The piece of shit Thanksgiving guest, Jack Kanner, Operation Desert Storm veteran.
Wow.
Guy's been trained. He's now homeless, so yes, he's malnourished. But that fucking guy was trained to kill. So I'm taking Jack Kanner, the piece of shit war veteran.
Jack Kanter, one time Walsh House Thanksgiving guest who was very unappreciative of the fact that he was allowed, brought in, showered, and allowed to wear Jim Walsh's clothes.
He wore Jim Walsh's like Michigan sweatshirt and underwear.
Yeah. That's fucked.
This was 902. See, 90210 would pick an issue and they would take one swing at it in 42 minutes a week. And then they would just punt and never come back to it again. So that's when they decided to take on the issue of our veterans.
Yeah.
And so
homeless war veterans.
Right. So this was after the first Desert Storm where basically we didn't get our hands dirty. We just blew shit up from a million miles away.
Kuwait.
We just went in and it was over and we came back.
That's right.
That if you did that episode now, it might be a little different where there are a whole bunch of people that are genuinely.
You couldn't do that.
They'd basically
PTSD
said, hey,
wasn't
you know
a household name.
These guys came back and that guy over there should have, they gave him a hot meal. That's pretty much even.
Yeah,
right?
That's
we're
enough.
Even, right?
Yeah. Now on your way.
Yeah.
Walk down the street.
Them attempting to fix our war veterans.
That's right.
Yeah, that's just an aside.
So that is an aside. Now the question to you is this. In a battle royale, everyone that's ever appeared on 90210 is in the Battle Royale. They're in a big dome. There's people gnawing.
It's Thunderdome.
Thunderdome. People are gnawing meat. They have bloodlust. It's like a Canadian juniors hockey game. Somebody has to win.
Yeah.
Somebody comes out. Somebody maces the final person to death and walks out covered in blood like Gladiator. Who is it, Travis?
So I think the two skills you need in that environment are physical strength and cunning.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that you need.
Cunning. Yes. One of my favorite words.
Yeah.
Particularly
it is a great word.
When it's ended with lingus. That's my favorite word.
It's it.
Yes.
All right.
Very difficult.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about cunning, like shrewd and cunnilingus. Thoughtful.
Stop. You're not talking about cunnilingus?
No, I'm talking about being cunning.
Because I'm a fan of that.
Yeah. I know you are.
Yes.
So.
Generous lover. Okay.
Not me.
Okay. Continue.
So I think you need a combination of physical strength and cunning. And I don't know if
cunning, they're... Cunning lingus? No?
Not that.
There's a different kind of cunning.
A different
I'd kind. Have to look that up. Yeah. Okay, continue.
So I don't know if there's a character that has both. So what you're looking for is some sort of an alliance that would allow both, so where you could go face to back to back and get everybody coming from every angle.
Anybody that's ever watched the WWF Survivor Series knows that this is what happens when everybody gets into a battle royale. You got to team up, and then the last two guys have to fight each other. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Therefore, the tag team that creates a battle of strength and cunning.
Tag teaming, not my thing. I'm more of a cunnilingus guy. Okay, continue.
Is the combination of the Sanders men. Steve Sanders for brawn and Rush Sanders for his cunning.
Cunning.
He clearly knew how to survive in the Beverly Hills environment where it's dog eat dog. And he was a very successful person in that universe. So
what was his business?
You know what?
Real estate,
I believe. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so
a lot of scumbags in real estate.
He would have used Steve to physically beat back all of his opponents, yet right when he knew, and what he would do is he would leave a couple of weak ones left, and he would tell Steve, no, leave him alone.
Yeah.
And then what he'd do is he'd have Steve eliminate all the strong, and Steve would trust his father, and that's when Rush would take his chance.
Yeah. And Rush didn't give a shit.
And then Rush would kill the two easy ones. Rush Sanders is the answer
because
to that question.
Steve,
Rush would work his own son.
Of course he
Steve is very fit. It would be easy for him to kill many, many people.
He's the brawn.
He's in good shape. He's much older. He's already a man. Everyone else is still in high school. He could kill him, and then in the process of killing a couple of the weak ones at the end.
Well, so is Andrea. She was a man.
That's true.
Rush is the answer.
Rush Sanders. Excellent. Kate McManus, while clearly from down under, not nearly the fan that these two nerds are. You are also aware of the characters of the show.
I'm just going to go with an outsider.
Tell me.
Who I thought was a bit of a psychopath.
Who? Oh, interesting.
That Ray Pruitt.
Oh, yeah.
Who was a woman beater.
He's prone to violence.
Mm-hmm.
Prone to violence.
And no qualms. No qualms
and
about
he gave no fucks. And I would be scared of him.
Do you think he would cruise from memory. In there like the honky-tonk man with his acoustic guitar and just fucking start blasting everybody in the head?
No, he'd start playing some music and kind of placate everyone.
Yeah?
And then
placate
while they were all sitting down having a listen, he'd pull out an AK and spray them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he'd bum everyone out with how do you talk to an angel.
To an angel.
That would be part of his weaponry.
Wow.
Remember David Silver's rap about
race relations? You didn't put acoustic guitar in the weapons pile.
No, Travis, I don't remember David Silver's.
I do remember.
How did it go, Travis?
I don't
Rogers.
Remember the rap exactly, but I remember it was about if you get into a fight with a black guy, you need to squash it. Like, just let's just put this aside. Let's just squash it. And he'd do this. He'd go squash it.
Ed Daly, you seem to have a better memory of it. How did it go?
No, I think. I don't remember the exact verse.
I feel like you do.
I think the same thing. I think they wrote that while the Rodney King race riots were going.
That was the week
like they were like
with race.
We gotta address this shit, and then they just put it out there.
So good, so good. Okay, guys, excellent job all around. I have to tell you, I'm so educated. I was in high school when the show came out. I was drinking Magnum Tall Boys, Magnum malt liquor, probably not even made anymore, but it was one of the best malt liquors.
That was a King Cobra, man.
That's a good beer. That was made by the Coors Brewing Company. What about
that? Was a St. Ides.
St. Ides is fantastic. $1.79. It had it right on. There was a sticker on the St. Ides bottle, $1.79. Couldn't
and of
be
course,
it.
Old English. Oldie. Of course.
Oldie is a hard drink. Like, you would.
That was like lights out. You had a couple of those, and that was night
well,
night termite.
The thing about Oldie, here's Oldie. You got to get it really fucking cold. Like, any kind of beer, any kind of shitty beer is okay if it's freezing cold. So that Oldie, you got to get it cold. And Oldie was strong, and also you were drinking 40 ounces of it. So if you were drinking a 40-ounce of Oldie, you'd have to get it ice cold, and then you knew it was warming up. So and you're like, this
you
is going
to
taste,
pound it.
This is going to taste like hell
That's
in
right.
a couple minutes.
You had a time bomb
yeah,
in your hands.
You were
on it.
Yeah, and that's why you would get so fucked up. I'm not trying to brag, but I once beer bonged an entire 40 ounce of Oldie.
I had a teammate named Edgar Ramirez who could drink.
Oh, yeah, he played designated hitter for the Mariners. He's going to the Hall of Fame.
Edgar Martinez.
Well, and what'd you say?
Ramirez.
And they're different people.
Was he that second baseman for the Marlins?
I'm sure there's more than one Edgar Ramirez.
He played third base for a while, and then they would just let him hit because he could hit.
This
on
Edgar
base,
Ramirez could drink a 40-ouncer from the – remember, had the fat bottom. The opening was very small.
Yeah, it was.
Very small.
Yes, yeah, so it wasn't like a Mickey's Big Mouth.
Right. He could get that whole thing down in under 25 seconds.
No.
From the bottle.
Just pound it.
Just
that.
Gone.
And he got into Santa Barbara.
That first sip of Mickey's –
JUCO transfer.
You had like – Yeah, of course.
Yeah. From Cypress College.
That first sip of Mickey's was like a gallon in your throat right away.
Yes, you weren't ready for that.
That wide mouth, you're like, whoa, this is a lot of malt liquor
coming
out. You
weren't ready for that. Kate, did you have a favorite malt liquor? What were you?
Were you a Billy D. Williams?
I know you
guy?
Like Perrier Rocher champagne, and you only...
Jouer.
Very Joey, cool. You only allow French champagne to touch your lips.
That's
but
true.
Was there ever a moment that you were involved in the world of malt liquor?
I don't think so.
No, I didn't. I wouldn't guess that either.
One of my roommates from college, he was from Riverside and very smart, yet spoke with a Southern accent for reasons that were never fully explained to me. And before we'd go out at night, he'd go, "I'm going to go get me a couple of King Cobras."
Well, he was also gay.
No. Appetites. Yeah. I'm going to go get me a couple of King Cobras. But he'd say it with a Southern accent. It was awesome.
Sure sounds like an upside-down chimney sweep.
Wow, yeah, he was a diagonal sleeper, honestly. All right, guys. Excellent job. I'm super stoked that Travis could join us today. As you guys know, if you listen to the fourth most popular sports talk radio station.
Fourth most popular network.
and the fourth most popular network, sports talk radio network nationwide. Never quite sure how many affiliates we reach, but it's okay.
It's more than one.
It's more than, might be 20.
Yeah, I think
it could
that's
be
probably
more
close.
Than 20.
On a good day.
Point is, this guy's a fucking star.
Yeah.
He goes out of his way to come in here to flavor our eardrums, and he's such a pro, and so we're super stoked to have him here today. Thank you for joining us, Travis.
My pleasure. There is nothing I enjoy more than talking about 90210. I feel like we've barely scratched the surface.
Clearly.
That's the sad thing.
Yes.
We probably have a good 18 hours to go.
I've had enough personally.
If only we could do a separate 90210 podcast
no,
every week.
Stop.
Ed?
Stop.
You know
just,
how to.
I'm in. So, I'm in.
Because then we're doing 90210. We're doing The Bachelor. We're doing a lot of shows that I'm not getting paid for. Like I said, all you guys owe me $10,000. Kate McManus, you are a beautiful woman.
Thank you.
You are from Australia. You're exotic. You're special. You're interesting. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts.
Hey, you're welcome.
On 90210.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Ed Daly, you are a fountain of information. You have, it's like you absorbed all of the 1980s and 1990s in a way that no one else could possibly have done. The knowledge you have.
It's the old gift and a curse.
Blows me away.
Gift and a curse.
Every single day. I very much appreciate what you've done. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, for Ed Daly, for Kate McManus, a.k.a. Fancy Sauce, for Travis Rogers, I'm Brian Beckner. This has been episode 100 of the Baller Lifestyle podcast from theballerlifestyle.com. We will see you next week.